The minute-to-minute allocation of attention has dramatically changed since the advent of new technology. The force of distraction now rules. Years ago, we would eagerly check the mail. The snail mail, that is, whenever it came. But it only came once or twice a day. We might look forward to it and pounce upon it when it arrived. But now that it comes all the time, every second or so, we can't unlearn our eager anticipation. Without knowing it, we've trained ourselves to look forward to our various kinds of mail, even when we don't really look forward to what it usually contains. Some force in human nature seems to make an unopened message all but irresistible, leading us, indeed compelling us, to check our electronic messages reflexively, even when we know it is unlikely that we will find anything of urgency, anything of much excitement, or anything that couldn't wait, say, another 15 minutes, while we completed a conversation or a thought. When paying continuous partial attention becomes the norm, brain work suffers. We know about this in business, science, art, and any other activity typically associated with concentration. But it is just as damaging in love. Love is brain work. Without sustained attention, love loses luster. While a small percentage of the population, about 5%, have true attention deficit disorder in need of medical treatment, a much greater percentage of the population simply have trouble paying attention. It's not because they can't hear well enough. It's not because they don't care or they're depressed. It's not because they're selfish narcissists or passive-aggressive manipulators. It's because their circuits are overloaded. They deal with overload by tuning out much of it. When you're married to distraction, your relationship buckles. When the force of distraction prevails, your relationship is in trouble. Next, we will explore what happens in more detail and what can be done to fix the problem.
"Can we talk?" Joan Rivers used to ask at the beginning of her comedy routine. She had no idea how difficult it would become to answer yes to that simple request. Her heyday preceded the heyday of distraction. Let me give you a quick illustration. On a day that I had set aside to work on this program, I went up to my home office with my morning cup of coffee, opened my laptop, and began. With my first sentence of the day, my cell phone rang. I had made the cardinal error of not turning it off before I sat down to work. Once it rang, I couldn't resist seeing who was calling me. Such temptation is a function of the force of distraction. It is so difficult not to look and see. So I gave in. I looked. I saw a number I didn't recognize. Now what to do? Maybe it was a wrong number. But maybe it was someone who needed me. Maybe it was a call I shouldn't miss. Here again we see how seductive distraction can be. Obviously, if I had set aside the time to write, and obviously if I usually turned my cell phone off during this time, I had arranged my life so as to reserve a block of time when I would not be reachable by the world outside. But distraction blinded me to this. Suddenly, I felt indispensable. I had to answer the phone. This entire deliberation took place in seconds. I'm drawing it out to explain the phenomenon. The power of distraction lies in how quickly it acts, in how it disarms our intellect and captures the primitive centers of our brains, centers we automatically obey before we have the chance consciously and deliberately to override them. So I answered. Sure enough, someone needed me. It was the mother of a girl I was treating, and she had worried that she might not be able to reach me when she needed me. So I had given her my cell phone number while also explaining that I would not always instantly be available. Therefore, I would have been within my rights, so to speak, not to answer the phone right then. But having answered it, of course, I felt compelled to stay on the line. Once I had ascertained that it was not an emergency, I could easily have said to this mother, "I'm really sorry, but this is time I've set aside for writing. What's a good time this afternoon when I could call you back?" I know this mother well enough to realize that she would totally have understood. We could easily have had the discussion later on. But no, I felt compelled to stay on the line, even though in reality I had no reason to. This is the force of distraction in action. That external force, combined with the internal force, my personal psychology, created an unnecessarily prolonged distraction which I blamed the mother for, but in fact was of my own making. After I spoke to that mother, sure enough, my phone rang again, and sure enough, I took that call. This time it was my car dealer giving me an estimate on repairs I needed done. The estimate was much higher than I had expected, so even though the call only took a minute or so, it took me the better part of half an hour to regain my focus on my work. Repeated interruptions lead to what we call the souffle effect, filling up a given project with hot air, so that what ought to take an hour can take all day. To prevent the souffle effect, you must forbid interruptions. But the force of distraction can combine with your individual psychology to make you feel as if you must allow yourself to be interrupted. In the example I just cited, the only negative consequence was that I didn't get the work done that morning that I had hoped to get done. But if you take that example and extrapolate it into the world of marriage and relationships, you can see how, unless a person is careful, important conversations may never develop, or only develop piecemeal.